All the Vancouver Canucks were doing is winning until the usual February slide, and it was around that point where the Elias Pettersson contract talks, or lack thereof, were becoming a little bit of a distraction. It was the only thing the fans could talk about. Now all the fans can talk about is the pending playoff run that will hopefully bear one thing that has eluded them for the past 50 plus years, as we finally have a resolution. Who won, who lost, and what impact will this have on the Canucks' future? Episode 402 of the Lace Them Up Podcast starts right now.
And now, it's time to lace them up. Here's Brett and Steve.
And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Steve Ellsworth.
I'm Brett Dubuff.
For anyone in the Pacific Division that was hoping Elias Pettersson would leave Vancouver and stop becoming a nightmare, too bad. He has inked a long-term deal to stay a Canuck.
Yeah, it was interesting because I was prepared for us to have this debate this week before the signing, because I was thinking, like, if the Canucks actually went away with trading Elias Pettersson, that might
it would be a very Canucks thing to do.
It would be a very Canucks thing to do, but I think that would go down as one of the worst trades you could ever make. it just made no sense to me. Anyways, I guess we can get into it, but there were reports that Pettersson just didn't want to sign during the season, which is his right. Also, a lot of players do that. Like David Pastrnak last year did that, for instance. Not to mention the fact that Pastrnak and Pettersson share the same agent. So I'm sure that a lot of people were thinking that too. But so I didn't think anything of it. But then there was a beat reporter from the Canucks who was saying that, like, he used to think that it would be settled right away, but then there was parts where he was thinking, like, maybe it's not. And then I was still thinking, like, okay, this is not going to happen, purely because of the fact that the Canucks are the best team in the league. I know they're struggling a little bit here and there, but it's like they're still the top of their division and all that stuff. And then there's a report that comes out from Friedman that says that they were seriously trying to trade Pettersson to the Carolina Hurricanes, or the Hurricanes had offered something to the Canucks, and the Canucks were listening to it, but kind of declined it. And I was just thinking, like, unless it's Sebastian Aho and Andrei Svechnikov, the Canucks should just turn down the phone. And it's not that, like, I mean, I know I'm, like, maybe I'm overrating Elias Pettersson a little bit here, but that seems kind of insane to me, because it's like, every team wants Elias Pettersson. I don't think anyone knows that that's going to happen, but the Canucks were kind of in a tricky situation, because, like, let's say Pettersson was unhappy and didn't want to sign there. If you trade him right now, yeah, sure, you're getting something instead of letting him walk for nothing, kind of like what happened to Johnny Gaudreau back when he was in Calgary. But at the same time, the Canucks are in the playoffs largely because of Elias Pettersson, and you can't just let him, you know. And if you trade him away, then that's a signal for the rest of the Canucks team that they're not going for it this year. And then it's like, well, what's the point of getting Elias Lindholm? What's the point? Like, and then why are you wasting Quinn Hughes' breakout year? Why are you wasting Brock Besser all of a sudden becoming what he is? Like, then that made no sense as well. So yeah, it's true. I wouldn't put it past this Canucks situation. We haven't forgotten what happened last year with Bruce Boudreau and the Canucks, but at least now we, it's weird that I was like, I shouldn't get into it because it didn't happen, but I just went to it as it happened. So anyways, it's this contract is an 8-year deal worth $11.6 million. This would make him the fifth highest annual average value of all players. Panarin, McDavid, MacKinnon, and Matthews are the only ones to have more next year. And then in terms of, I was looking at the stats because, like, I was thinking, like, am I, like, overrating Elias Pettersson in some way, maybe? But, and, like, yeah, he doesn't, he has the second most points on the team currently. JT Miller has 82 points. And Elias Pettersson has 75 points. Both of them have played 62 games. So there's that. However, like, I feel like I remember back when the Canucks put Elias Pettersson on the ice. I think it was like in 20, might have been 2020, 2019, maybe 2020. No, it wouldn't have been 2020. It was 2019.
2018-19 was his rookie year.
Was that his rookie year? Yeah. Okay, yeah, good call. And I remember because, like, the Canucks were awful during that time period. And I feel like Pettersson made the Canucks into a relevant team all of a sudden.
There was that bank pass he made to Brock Besser. I think it was against Colorado.
Yeah.
And it was at that moment where it's just like, man, this kid is going to be something good.
Right. And, like, he had the best. I remember, like, his next, the year after he was drafted. So that was, like, in 2018. I remember, like, he was hyped up a lot by a lot of, like, people in the media because he had the best. He was basically an 19-year-old killing it in the Swedish Hockey League. And that's a league for professionals. That's, like, almost equivalent to the NHL. And
Which is funny because when he was first drafted, everyone was like, who the heck is this guy? What is Vancouver doing?
Yeah, it was kind of...
It's because they had made stretches in the top 10 before, and they were just like, is this another one of those?
Right, because they had, like, if I remember correctly, I think people were shocked that Gabe Vilardi wasn't the pick or anything like that. I think there's another, Cody Glass, maybe Casey Middlestad. Yeah, I'm looking here now. It's looking pretty good. I mean, obviously, I think in a redraft, I think Cale Makar obviously goes first. Miro Heiskanen, you could... I wouldn't hate you if you say Miro Heiskanen. And obviously, Nico Hischier hasn't had a bad career so far either. But I think it would be Cale Makar and then Elias Pettersson. Although I'd have to look at the rest of... Oh, Jason Robertson's also on here. So it would be... It's a pretty good draft class. But...
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, in any case, I do remember, I think... Because we were doing the show back then, I think we were saying that, like, we were shocked that Gabe Vilardi wasn't a pick or wasn't higher. And Gabe Vilardi is all of a sudden doing well, too, now. Anyways, but, yeah, so I do remember that he kind of, like, put the Vancouver Canucks onto the map after, obviously, they lost in 2011 in the Stanley Cup Finals. But after that, the Canucks kind of fell apart as a franchise. A lot of that had to do with Jim Benning not being a good GM and all that. But yeah, then they started to put pieces together. They drafted Quinn Hughes the following year. They had Brock Besser already in the system at that point. So yeah, there's that. But yeah, so I do think that he was a part of their identity. And maybe that's a part of the reason why I feel like, oh, the Canucks would be very dumb to trade him. And then at the same time, it's like, yeah, JT Miller, technically, he does have more points than Elias Pettersson does right now. But I do think that Elias Pettersson is, first off, he's 5 years younger than JT Miller. And he can only get, like, he's Elias Pettersson's 25 years old, which is pretty crazy. So he's only going to get better, Pettersson. And whereas JT Miller is technically on his decline, but they're going to be teammates for a long time because JT Miller has a long-term contract as well. So I don't know. I guess he is in that ballpark of being the fifth highest paid player next year. I'm not shocked by that, but I don't know. I think like when I'm looking at this list now, it's like, oh, that means that he's paid less than Willie Nylander, Erik Karlsson, Pasternak, Dahlin, Doughty, Tavares, and Marner. I think Pasternak's better than Pettersson, but at the same time, like, EP does play center, and he's a good center at that. So, and there's not a lot of centers like that in the league. So I guess that does bring him up to a premium where he plays a tougher position. I do think that the Canucks made this the right choice. Compared to what happened last year, where there was a ton of distractions, and now they kind of have turned the ship around this year. So it made sense that, like, yeah, I think I figured, like, even though there was a speculation that they were going to trade him, which I never bought in the first place, but even still, it's like, if this is going to calm everyone in Vancouver down, then great. Then, yeah, you have it. He signed a long term here, and both sides should be pretty happy.
Yeah, just taking a look at how the contract breaks down. There's zero no trade protection in year one, but no move clause from year two onwards. $14.5 million, the total salary, most of that being signing bonuses in the first 2 years. $11 million in year three, where all of it is base salary, no signing bonus to be found. $14.45 million in year four. More of that is base salary than signing bonus, $9.5 million base to $5 million flat for the signing. $12.25 million in year five of the deal, with most of that again being base salary, $7.25 million base to $5 million flat signing. And then $8.7 million for the final 3 years of that contract. In all three of those, the base salary is $3.7 million and the signing bonus is $5 million flat. When you consider that, like you said, Elias Pettersson is 25 years old, and that's probably the one thing we've had to debate is the pronunciation of his name, because yep. I hear one thing and then I hear another thing and now it's this thing. But right. I believe Elias Pettersson, I've said it wrong this entire time. But what's really jumped at the screen here is that the faceoff mastering hasn't really happened. His career high is 49.3% in the dot, which is this year. Outside of that, he's pretty much 44-45% in his earlier years, where he wasn't really taking that many faceoffs. It was at 41%, but that's a work in progress. You can work around that. I can understand why Elias was playing the waiting game here, and it's largely because you didn't really know what to expect out of the Vancouver Canucks once the season began. Again, like you said, the distractions, the series of first half slumps that we've seen, that's been going on for a couple of years now, they didn't have Elias Lindholm in the picture either, so there wasn't really anything to scream, yeah, I should re-sign 100% before we play any hockey this year. And I think his intention was for this to obviously not be a distraction and let his play do the talking, and then they'd revisit at the end of the year. But similar to Chris Pronger, in one of his first contract negotiations with the Blues, it became a point where it seemed as those decisions to play it out and wait till the end of the year was kind of serving more as a distraction to the team and maybe distracting from his play a little bit, because he has been slumping like the team has been for the majority of February. And I think that's when, on top of that rumor that, you know, hey, Carolina might have been calling Vancouver about you, where he gave permission to his agents to talk with the Canucks. The thing about Elias Pettersson is he was always going to get the bag because his agents are Pat Brisson and J.P. Barrie. Pat Brisson represents Nathan McKinnon, John Tavares. He got Seth Jones, $9.5 million.
David Pasternak. He
got Dylan Larkin in his bag last year. Pierre-Luc Dubois.
David Pasternak. Yeah.
I don't see Pasternak here. That might be J.P. Barrie, but but either way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I thought I saw somewhere that Pasternak and Pettersson had the same agent, but maybe I was wrong. Yeah. Anyways.
But, yeah, there are a lot of guys that got their peg that maybe aren't worth it, like Seth Jones and Pierre-Luc Dubois. You know, Cole Caulfield, he got his bag before he really had a breakout season. And, hey, look at there. Vancouver teammate Quinn Hughes, who's set to get paid again in a couple of years, is also represented by him. You mentioned Jason Robertson, same thing. So there are a lot of guys in the pecking order that really trust this guy to hit a home run with their next contract. So it wasn't a matter of if he was going to get his bag, it was who was going to be paying it to him. And ultimately, if you're the Vancouver Canucks, this is a major win down the line because the cap is going to go up. In theory, Elias could have done what Austin did, taken like a 3-year or 4-year deal, waited a bit longer, then really get the bag. But he decided to sign long-term right here, right now with the Canucks, give them an idea of what their plan is at the trade deadline, what their plan is for the offseason, because they know what his cap it is, how long he's going to be signed for with them. And ultimately, just for the fans, for the team sponsors that have witnessed a lot of BS with this team and are finally seeing a winning season being put together, the best that the Canucks have looked, I would argue, since 2011 when they made it to the Stanley Cup Finals. I think this is a huge win just for the city and the fan base. And when I look at guys that have recently gotten paid, like Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid years ago, and obviously years down the line, in a couple of years, he's going to break the bank again, and Nathan McKinnon, and more recently, William Nylander. Brett, if I told you who's the better player, William Nylander or Elias Pettersson, what would you say?
Yeah, I think I would go with Pettersson just because he does play center, and that's a tougher position, but yeah. I mean, both are pretty good, but yeah.
And he drives play, and the team is noticeably better with him in the lineup as well. And in the past couple of seasons, we've seen him slump, and maybe short-term that impacted his value, but he shot the lights out last year with his best season by far. He's shooting out the lights again this year despite the slump. His shooting percentage has been like 15, 16, 17% every single year. In a perfect world, know what he's going to bring every single night. And the other thing with the Canucks is this guy was offer sheet eligible. So if you're Vancouver and you're up against the cap and a team offer sheets him 10 plus million per season or whatever, you can either at that point take the 4 first-round picks because you can't afford Elias Pettersson, or you match that, and now all of a sudden you have to make some tough decisions with your roster. Now they get to avoid all of that on top of that because they've signed this deal now. And when you consider how the contracts are going to look moving forward with the future centerman getting paid and how the cap is going to go up, the fact that they have Elias Pettersson at $11.6 million for the next 8 years, there's a lot to think about that.
By the way, according to The Athletic, Elias Pettersson has two agents, Pat Brisson and J.P. Barrie. They're both of Creative Artist Agency. So it's not...
And both are very darn good at their jobs. Yeah. They've been in the game a long time, and a lot of people trust them.
So I was technically right, but you were also... technically correct too. I didn't realize that he needed
J.P. Barrie represented Alfredson for quite a while too.
Yeah, I didn't realize that they like he needed two agents. I feel like most of them just need one. Or I didn't realize that Pettersson and J.P. Barrie are like co-workers in a way. So
their track record is, I mean, Brisson speaks for itself.
But, yeah. Like, but JP Barry,
Barzal, Philip Forsberg, Jacob Verana's on here too. Good God.
Well, Verana's not, I mean, he hasn't lived up to anything now, but
I know, but like, he's still got $5.25 million a year for his client. Like,
That's what you mean, but yeah, no, it's he's basically, they're basically the Scott Boris of the NHL. Anyways, so in terms of the Canucks cap situation, it's kind of interesting here. As I alluded to, JT Miller is also on a long-term contract, $8 million for I think 7 more years.
Just started this year.
And then you have Brock Besser for another year after this one. Connor Garland, $4.9 million. It's not great, but not bad. We'll get into Elias Lindholm in a second, but yeah, he's a free agent. Teddy Bluger's a UFA. Sam Lafferty's a UFA. Vasily Podkolzin's an RFA. Then on the defensive side of things, you have Tyler Myers, Filip Hronek, Nikita Zadorov, Ian Cole, Mark Friedman, Matt Irwin, and you also have Casey DeSmith as UFAs. Oh, I guess there's like, you know, Dakota Joshua, who's on IR. He's a UFA. So most of your defensive core is free agents, except for Quinn Hughes, which is, you know, fine or fair enough. But yeah, so the thing that's going to be interesting now is Elias Lindholm, because you get the Canucks get him in a trade, and then they, I mean, it says, oh wait, is that, well, I guess we don't know the pure cap right now. I'm trying to see how much, because it says that they have $2 million in cap space right now, but that's when that's different than the cap space that they'll eventually have. Okay, so they have $24 million in cap space. And granted, they have to like pay like 5 more defensemen basically after that.
Yeah.
Although like Tyler Myers, he's not making $6 million again. Filip Hronek, he's making $4.4 million. He might end up
making that'll a little be bit an more. Interesting case because he's been very, very good too. Zadorov and Cole, I don't think they're worth that much either. So you can take or leave. But again, you're still going to have to fill up a lot of defensive spots. And at that point, it's like, okay, who are we going to get and how much money are we going to
Right, right. So yeah, like even if you do re-sign Tyler Myers, you still have to get, like, sign 4 other defensemen for them. But, yeah, so Elias Lindholm, it's an interesting thing, and I said it at the time when they made this trade. They traded a lot to get him, and, you know, you do that 100% out of 100 times if you're going for it. Elias Lindholm, like, no matter who gets traded before this deadline, Elias Lindholm was the prize, and he still is the prize. So that is, like, it's not a bad trade, and you do that. However, they traded a lot to get him, and because of that, I feel like they traded a lot to get him to not be a rental. And now I'm just wondering, it's like, okay, what do they do with Elias Lindholm? Maybe, I mean, I guess they could let him walk, but I feel like that makes not a ton of sense either. Just because then they, you know, because Hunter Bruskevich, like, they're probably going to give away their first anyways, that's fine. But Hunter Bruskevich, he had a pretty good, you know, he's a pretty top, like, center, or sorry, top defenseman for now the Calgary Flames. So there may be a point when if they don't sign Elias Lindholm, there's a chance that the Calgary Flames end up winning that trade purely because they got Hunter Bruskevich in that trade. So I guess that's not the end of the world if they don't sign Elias Lindholm, but yeah, it is kind of interesting because I guess this is sort of why they traded Bo Horvat last year, because they had two centers already in JT Miller and Elias Pettersson. So at the same time, I guess it's like, okay, then you have a same situation where it's like Elias Lindholm, he's pretty good on the faceoff dot as a center, but you also have a good center in JT Miller, you have a good center in Elias Pettersson, so maybe one of them just goes on the wing, or you just have like a really good third line, which is also like, which will come in handy in the playoffs, of course. But
and they already have that.
Yeah. So yeah, they already have that this year, pretty much exactly. But
moving forward, but Teddy Bluger, by the way, an underrated part of that third line, is also on an expiring contract. Yeah. So you have to find a way to keep him in the mix. And you're only paying him, I think, 1.9 this year.
Yeah. Niles Hoglander as well. Connor Garland. Although he's on the third line now too. They have a good depth situation, but my point being is is that like I don't know if I feel like if Elias Lindholm goes into the market, I feel like he could find a better contract out there instead of what the Canucks could offer. So I don't know exactly what they do here. I think they won't sign him. But yeah, at the same time, it's like that trade, like they traded a lot to get Elias Lindholm. And it would be kind of weird just to get, like, I mean, obviously it depends on how he does in the playoffs, but, and like if they win the cup, it doesn't matter if they sign him or not. But yeah, at the same time, you're just like, well, they paid a lot to get Elias Lindholm, and now you're, if he's just a rental, it's like, okay, that's terrible asset management.
I would say worse than that time they traded like Tyler Madden and a bucket of futures for Tyler Toffoli.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the time when they traded Bo Horvat and got a first from the Islanders and then traded that away immediately when they to Detroit for Filip Hronek.
Yeah, there was all, well, that was also suspect, but I think part of the method to that madness was, you know, trying to still be competitive and still, I think, trying to win over Elias Pettersson. And I think also that's probably why they got Elias Lindholm in the first place.
That's a good point.
Why I think they should at least consider keeping him around if they can afford it.
Also, sure. Hronek has been pretty good.
If they can't afford him, then they better make, you know, some other moves to appease Pettersson, because the sole reason you're keeping him around and the sole reason he agreed to be here is he wants to win and he wants to be on a competitive team that's in the chase every year.
Yeah.
And I don't see how you're staying in the chase if you lose a guy of Lindholm's quality. And I definitely think he can play the position, he can score the goals, and I definitely think the Canucks can afford him. It's going to come at the cost of, you know, other pieces, and at that point it becomes a debate of, okay, well, how's our roster going to look beyond this year? Who can we afford to keep? How much is it gonna cost to like keep this third line together? Can we give Teddy Bluger what he wants? Or because like the other thing is, I feel like the Canucks might overpay to get guys on their roster. For example, I'm not going to point out the Connor Garland and Brock Besser signings. I'm more so looking at the signings of like Ian Cole at $3 million. I'm looking at Tucker Poolman at $2.5 million per season. They gave Carson Soucy $3.25 million, which is 2 years left after this year. He's on LTIR currently, so I guess moving forward, he'll be a part of that. And there's also an interesting part about this, and that's the dead cap of Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
Right.
Because it's $146,000 this year, But then it jumps up to 2.34, and then it's at 4.766 for 2 years, and then it's at 2.1 something for another two. So that dead cap is going to be on the book quite a bit, and that becomes awfully important to note when you consider that, you know, once you pay Quinn Hughes within the next three seasons, and that's going to be costing even more. You're going to be challenged with, you know, icing a competitive roster at that point. So the next couple of years in particular, the Canucks really got to go for it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And also, I should mention that Filip Hronek has actually worked for them, so it might have, in hindsight, like,
better than either of us expected, honestly. He's having a career season.
I think it's one of those things where at the time it didn't make a ton of sense because the Canucks were bad. And now that they're good, we're like, oh, right, of course. Okay. now it makes sense.
Yeah. Everything looks better when you're winning.
Exactly. So, but yeah, no, I think I didn't buy that the Canucks were going to trade him, as I had mentioned, because it was kind of like, and even if he was unhappy, it would be like a Johnny Gaudreau situation or Matthew Tkachuk on their last season in Calgary, or even like Panarin and Bobrovsky in their last season in Columbus, where it's like, okay, this team's making the playoffs, and if this is the last year for them, it's like, it would be idiotic to trade them because they're the best players on the team. And, you know, that would, you know, you go for it, even if you're not signing them. So, I think it made sense from that angle. But yeah, when I heard the Carolina, you had emailed me that, like, oh, Carolina had expressed interest in the Canucks, and I'm like, yeah, tell me what team isn't interested in getting Elias Pettersson. So
what's even more hilarious is apparently the fact that Jesperi Kotkaniemi was involved in those. Oh, was he? It's like, why would the Canucks take him?
Yeah. Well, that was the funny part. Is like, if you're serious, like, and when I thought about it, like, the only team that I think I would be shocked by not taking him or not being interested in Elias Pettersson is the Edmonton Oilers, and that's only because they have the two best players in the league at the center position.
Another one.
And they can't afford another one. I guess technically on that same note, then Toronto I would be shocked by too. But it was just like you just said, like, oh, if the Canucks were to trade Elias Pettersson, Carolina would have been one of the suitors. And I was like, yeah, and 20 other teams, like, and the rest of the league would be interested. So it was just funny from that angle where it's just like, but yeah, it would have been dumb, and I just didn't buy into it, and to the point where I just felt like I shouldn't even talk about it because everyone agrees that it would have been dumb.
The other layer is that, like, regardless of whether or not you keep Elias Lindholm in the mix, the fact that you have Elias Pettersson in the mix and JT Miller still here, and you have a resurgent Brock Besser and Quinn Hughes and Thatcher Demko between the pipes. If it's not Elias Lindholm wanting to commit long-term, there are going to be other players that are willing to give the Vancouver Canucks a shot, even in, you know, a Canadian market where it's presumed that Canadian markets aren't that big of a draw for the big-name free agents. At the end of the day, if you want to play with Elias Pettersson, he's right there.
Yeah.
Just sign with Vancouver.
And not only that, but the Canucks have a defenseman named Elias Pettersson too. So,
imagine when he breaks out, he's probably gonna have 40 points.
It's like they need to, like, the Carolina. You know, Carolina needs to trade with the Islanders to get the defenseman Sebastian Aho, and then we have, and then eventually you have the Canucks playing the Hurricanes with that setup.
I think the Hurricanes would be more confusing because I don't think there's a different way of pronouncing Sebastian Aho, but
Pettersson
and maybe Elias Peterson.
Yeah, it could be Peterson.
Maybe there's like a different name pronunciation on top of the different numbers.
I also
it's just like, oh yeah, that guy is that guy.
I also think Elias Lindholm is pronounced like his first name is different than Elias. Like they both, I forget which one's which, and if
I
Pettersson,
think Elias is Lindholm for sure.
If either one is listening, I apologize for butchering your name or which one you go by, but I believe I heard it somewhere
both
that
Swedish.
Both of the, yeah, I heard it somewhere that they both go by a different, even though it's spelled the same way, they both go by it's like they pronounce it differently. Okay. Anyways, speaking of, I assume that's it in terms of. Like, do you have anything else on this contract?
Not really. Just in the sense of, you know, again, it's going to set the market for, you know, whatever the next big name center is going to want. And the center, obviously, people are going to look to is Leon Draisaitl, who's up next. Mm-hmm. And I'm also interested to see what kind of money Jack Eichel makes. It doesn't matter what is going to happen with Connor McDavid because he's comparable to nobody and he's going to break the bank with his next contract anyway. But moving forward, the future centers that I'm interested to see what their next contracts looks like would probably be Draisaitl for sure, and then second to him, Jack Eichel.
Yep. Okay. So now we go into the rapid fire. Putting 15 minutes onto the clock. So we're going to start off with the other trades that happen here. We're first going to say the Dallas Stars, they get Christopher Tanev. Chris Tanev from Calgary. Although first, what happened was Calgary traded with New Jersey. And then New Jersey traded Tanev to Dallas.
So how it happened is 50%. Calgary retains 50%, Devils retain 25%, and then the remaining 25% goes to Dallas. Right. I always get it confused, and I have to read the trade carefully.
I know, it's confusing.
Okay, this is how it's happening.
Yeah, it's confusing how it's worded, or from Cat Friendly. Cole Brady is also from New Jersey, goes to Dallas as well. And then New Jersey gets a fourth round pick from Dallas in 2026. Calgary gets Artem Grushnikov, who's an AHL defenseman, a 2024 second round pick, a 2026 third round pick that's conditional, and that condition is the pick is only transferred if Dallas advances to the Stanley Cup Finals in 2024. So that's this year. Grushnikov, it seems like he projects if he does make it into the NHL, he's going to be like a shutdown defenseman, which kind of checks out because that's basically what Christopher Tanev is to begin with. He's just a shutdown defenseman. I like this deal for all sides pretty much. Although, one, I like, you know, Dallas, I think, like, if they had a weakness, it was their defensive side of things. So they add a shutdown defenseman. For that, you get Calgary Flames, maybe you could have maybe gotten a first, but for a guy like Tanev, but I think that what they ended up getting makes a ton of sense, and they'll probably get even more once they trade Noah Hanifin. It's weird to evaluate shutdown defensemen, especially like prospect defensemen, because you don't know how they're going to be. Because you can't even really judge them on their stats, because it's like, okay, he's a low-scoring defenseman in the AHL, but maybe he's just really good defensively. Maybe there is something there, but we'll see. The only thing, though, I am a little bit confused about is, I don't know why the Devils decided to do this and get in on this mix. I know that they eventually ended up getting Curtis McDermott, but I don't know why they seem to retain some salary for it, because it seems like the Devils could still make the playoffs this year. So this trade makes it, their involvement in this trade makes it seem like they're giving up on the year or something like that, because it's like they could use that cap space. So that part I don't understand.
So I'm going to try and analyze the Devils as short-term sellers, and I think this move is a clear indication that they're not as all-in as I thought they'd be on deadline day. And the reason being is we've learned that UC Saros of the Nashville Predators is no longer on the trade market. So right. they can't get him before the season's over. The Flames have also done the same with Jacob Markstrom. They're not taking calls on him for the rest of the year. If they were even like exploring a trade, it was just, they would only approach Jacob Markstrom essentially if there was anything remotely close to like, hey, this might be an opportunity right. you'd like. What do you think? So the Devils really don't have a goalie to chase, and that's the main thing that they need. So I'm thinking going into the trade deadline, the expiring contracts such as Tyler Toffoli, that could be a playoff contender, they sell those guys to get assets that they can flip on draft day, during the offseason, whatever. And then in the offseason, they build back up and they build a stronger roster from there. So I think it's they're short-term sellers for that reason. And I think retaining 25% of a guy's salary that's not going to play for you and getting a fourth out of it is just a step in that direction. It's also interesting for Curtis McDermott is he spent time on the wing. You know who also right. plays on the wing? Tyler Toffoli on the final year of his contract. So I think McDermott is the guy they probably slot in if and when Toffoli gets dealt. So that's yep. the New Jersey side of the equation. To your point about Tanev, a guy who blocks shots, the missing piece of the defense, and when you look at how Dallas can roll four lines like it's nothing, and they just, you know, bring in some of their young kids to further strengthen their roster, I think loading up on defense is the main thing they can do to improve their roster, and that's pretty much it. And Calgary, they get a rink rat that, you know, just everyone loves, has a great mindset, loves the game, loves his role on the team. And if you want in-depth access on everything Calgary Flames leading up to the trade deadline, Flames Nation YouTube channel, Boomer Pinder, Rhett Warner, they provide excellent analysis on everything, and they were just raving about how Craig Conroy loves this kid. And part of the reason is because they have a lot of offensive defensemen in the system, and this is a guy that can complement those offensive attributes with his shutdown abilities, something that Mark Methot was able to do with Erik Karlsson back in Ottawa, and that was a match made in heaven up until, you know, Mark Methot got yoinked by the Vegas Golden Knights. So
right.
I think that's the logic behind that.
Right. And then we have like a poor man's version of that trade, like a day after this or 2 days after this.
Second time the Leafs traded for this guy, by the way.
Yeah. Toronto gets Ilya Lyubushkin. They also get Kirill Slepets from Carolina, who retained 50% of Lyubushkin from Anaheim. Carolina gets a sixth-round pick in 2024, and the Anaheim Ducks get a 2025 third-round pick from Toronto. And then you were telling me just before we aired that Matt Rempe injured Ilya Lyubushkin in his first game yeah. back. It is kind of funny, though, that Lyubushkin just, like, he was a Toronto Maple Leaf last year, and now he's back in Toronto again. I assume the reason why Toronto did this was just because they were like, okay, Chris Tanev's gone. We were looking for a shutdown defenseman. Let's just get Lyubushkin back. It is funny, though, seeing this uncapped friendly, the two trades side by side. I'm like, oh, this is like a similar trade going on between those two things.
What's funny is that before the season began, Lyubushkin was moved to the Sabres for a fourth round pick. He originally signed in the 2022 offseason with Buffalo at $2.75 million. The Ducks took all of that on his final year of the contract. So they retain 50%. Carolina gets 25%. The Leafs get the remaining 25%. But as I mentioned, the second time that Toronto has acquired Lyubushkin via trade, So the first trade, it was Dzingel and Lyubushkin, who was then, I think, just under $1.5 million, for Nick Ritchie and a second-round pick. In 2025, which still hasn't been picked yet, and that second-round pick is higher than any of the other picks Lyubushkin has since been traded for in the past two trades, which is absolute madness.
That's funny. I actually just saw this here. I didn't put this on our item list, but I figured I should mention this. Jonathan Quick gets signed for one more year for the Rangers, $1.275 million. I figured that was worth a shout-out here before we move on. But, yeah, no, that's he's having – like, I thought his career was done, but it's good that he's at least, like, providing some backup sources and gives Shesterkin some rest and things like that. There was like a moment too where like it looked like Quick was like out playing Shesterkin, and I thought that Quick was done, so it's good that at least he has another career or a second career now, even though he's like 36 years old. So that's a nice trade, or at least to keep him going, and it's like low risk because it's not a ton of money, and if he falls off the face of the earth, it's not a big deal at the end of the day. But well, yeah.
Just the mentorship he provides as well, like with Darcy Kemper, with Jack Campbell, when he went to Toronto, of all of them were speaking pretty highly of just Quick as a mentor behind the scenes, too.
Yep.
I felt at the beginning of the year, if this is a guy that can just play games, give you quality starts whenever he's there, and is just a good all-around teammate, automatic bargain for the Rangers, and has proved to be exactly that. Hopefully it continues for their sake.
He also grew up a Rangers fan, so I'm sure it's like there's a little bit of that.
He's living his dream right now.
Yeah, so it is pretty cool to just be like, oh, he's living his dream, literally. He's already accomplished everything. You know, he's won a couple Stanley Cups and all that stuff, but yeah, to be a part of your, like, growing up there, it's kind of a special thing. I feel like we don't talk about the Nashville Predators a ton, just because they're like a small market team more or less, but they're low key on an 8-game winning streak. So they're currently in a playoff spot too because of this. But famously what happened was, they were losing, just before the break. They were, apparently everyone
was at home against Dallas. I think they lost like 9-2.
And then when they supposedly, because they were going to Vegas in a few games after that, there was like everyone, like the players, the management, everyone was going to go to this U2 concert that's in the Sphere in Vegas, owned by James Dolan, by the way. And then after that 9-2 loss that Steve just mentioned, the coach, I'm blanking on the guy's name, they canceled that.
Andrew Burnett.
That's right. Andrew Burnett.
Association with Barry Trotz. I'm sure he had a role to play.
I'm sure. I almost said John Hines and I was like, oh no, he got fired. so they canceled the trip. Then they beat St. Louis, they end up beating Vegas, and then they beat L.A., San Jose, Anaheim, Ottawa, Minnesota, and Colorado. Of course, the California teams, it's like, you know, other than L.A., who's pretty good, and Vegas is pretty good. But, like, you know, they beat San Jose, Anaheim, Ottawa. They're not great teams, but Minnesota beating Colorado, beating LA and Vegas, and even St. Louis, I'll give them some credit there too. It's like, okay, that's impressive now. I don't know what to make of the Predators as a whole. I'm sure they'll fall off soon, but it is cool that they have some fight over it, and I guess they have some motivation. Who knew that canceling a concert trip like that would ignite something?
Maybe if they find what they're looking for, which is that elusive Stanley Cup, you two will play at the championship parade. I'm terribly sorry, by the way, for the horrible YouTube reference.
I'm sure you're not the only one, or like it's maybe the Stanley Cup final will be on a Sunday, Bloody Sunday or something. I don't know.
Yeah, or like a beautiful day. That's Alfie's music.
It could be a beautiful day. Yeah, yeah. I feel like we're trying to like pigeonhole these songs.
Yeah, let's go while we're ahead. Exactly. Or before we cancel ourselves.
Before we get vertigo.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, I'll stop. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, no, in any case, I mean, as you were saying, it's like, okay, yeah, UC Saros was on the rumor mill, and it looks like, yeah, within good reason now, it's like, okay, now the team's winning. And that's probably why they weren't going to trade him. But yeah, so yeah, I guess that's good, but I feel like we don't talk about Nashville for whatever reason. So it's, you have your attention, Nashville, now. Let's do that. Evgeny Kuznetsov was placed on waivers. He just got cleared from playing in the players' assistant programs. I believe no one claimed him. And I did see that the GM had mentioned that this is like, you know, he kind of just needs a change of scenery. And I assumed that no one was going to claim him just because of the fact that he's like making $7.2 million or something, like a high number for two more years. So
I think it's 7.8 is the number.
What's strange is, like, I feel like whenever you see like players being placed on waivers, it's like, oh, that guy's going to get claimed or something. And what's funny is that Kuznetsov is the best player to be placed on waivers, at least this year. And then I was just like, oh, and then I looked at his contract and I was like, oh, wait a second. Okay, no one's going to pick him up. Even if, like, yeah, you can make a case that maybe Evander Kane, who had a bounce back year or even got through worse stuff, because he had that, like, sexual assault case thrown against him. And there's also Corey Perry, similarly, in that situation, too. But yeah, I hope he, you know, Kuznetsov figures something out in the AHL. Yeah, he, you know, but we'll see, and it's up to him. He's but yeah, I think it was the right move to just send him down to the AHL so he doesn't have as much pressure.
Yeah. Looking at his contract status, $7.8 million cap, it a bit less now that he's buried in the minors.
Mm-hmm.
But $7.8 million for the rest of this year, for all of next year, and then he's a free agent. It should also be noted that Nicholas Backstrom, as we know, is basically done for the year with his injury. He has 1 year at $9.2 million left after this. So in a year and a half, the Capitals all of a sudden are going to have a lot of cap space to play around with, which could help their efforts. I think Anthony Mantha's contract will be expiring. Actually, expires this year too. So
yeah,
they definitely have opportunities to bolster their roster. But for the most part, it's just a smorgasbord of I don't know what to think about this team right now.
Yeah, it was interesting. I know that we're past the time, but it was, I remember like a few years ago when Connor McMichael had a big like time in the age, I think it was the OHL.
He was having an unreal.
And then you look at their cap friendly page and you see like, okay, Ovechkin's like their top six was pretty much handled contract wise. Cause he had Ovechkin, Backstrom, Kuznetsov, Tom Wilson, and I think there was another one too. And you're just thinking like, okay, Connor McMichael's not going to be on this, on this team for a while, just from a contract standpoint. It's going to be hard to see him, break that top six. And then, you know, now this year it's like, yeah, Connor McMichael has been playing a fair bit now and he's gotten some points in. You know, we'll see what happens with him. But also Hendrix LaPierre is doing well. And the biggest surprise is Dylan Strome is suddenly, like, the best player on the Capitals as a skater. So it's like, yeah, it's like, it's a different Capitals team, but maybe this is a good thing that Backstrom and Kuznetsov are not on the team anymore. So we'll see how it goes. Because I wanted to let me just look, double check here. Hendrix LaPierre is now on the top line. Dylan Strome, do you have a guess on how many points Dylan Strome has? He's played 59 games.
I would say 45, 50 range.
Yeah, 46 points.
Wow,
so,
okay.
Yeah, not bad. Especially when his like line mates are Max Pacioretty and Sonny Milano.
Remember when the Hawks just didn't qualify him?
Yep. No, I know. It's crazy. But yeah, in any case, you can follow us on Twitter at Lace Up Podcast. Our Facebook is Lace Them Up. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, wherever else you get your podcasts. That's about it. I'm Brett Dubuff.
I'm Steve Ellsworth, back with whatever trade deadline coverage we have in episode 403 of the Lace Them Up Podcast.